Chapter 9. Irwin Farms controlled the quarter horse competition in the Midwest. 25 years before, Ed Irwin, District Attorney Quentin Irwin Jr.'s father, had purchased a perfectly proportional colt, the offspring of the Kingston Ranch's foundation sire, Old Musket. The colt, Captain Jones, had continued Old Musket's grand line of quarter horses, many of whom had been champions in the annals of the American Quarter Horse Association over the years since. While quarter horses were not only well-suited for western riding and cattle work, many racetracks offered quarter horses a wide assortment of paramutual horse racing with purses in the millions. A few, not many, of Irwin Farm's quarter horses had also been trained to compete in dressage, where horse and rider were expected to perform, from memory, a series of predetermined movements. Irwin Farms boasted a dressage arena under roof, a standard size which by rule measures 20 meters by 40 meters or 66 by 131 feet. Saturday, after Thaddeus filed the complaint, a certain late 20s rider was working a horse named Sister Andromeda in the dressage arena. She was taking Sister Andromeda through the complex series of maneuvers they might face should they ever compete. For Eileen Creighton, the rider, competition was far from her mind, as she was deeply involved with the raising of her daughter Eleanor. For now, riding was a hobby, although a hobby much loved and, in a way, a carry-on of a Creighton family tradition. Eileen was a single parent. Dr. Bill Creighton had been instantly killed when kicked in the head by one of their own quarter horses 3 years earlier. Eileen, who was a philosophy graduate from Bennington, suddenly found herself head of household and without any marketable skills. As the help wanted ads weren't exactly falling all over themselves looking for philosophers, so she enrolled in several online training schools and became trained as a computer programmer, the last thing anyone who knew her might have expected.
"Simple," she said. "They pay $80,000 a year, and you can work from home."
Thanks to Dr. Creighton's substantial life insurance policy, Eileen and Eleanor had been able to remain in the family home, a small horse farm 5 miles east of Orbit. The horses, however, had been sold off following the tragedy. There were just too many painful memories there. Lately, though, Eileen had been showing up at Quentin Irwin Jr.'s spread, helping him clean stalls and drive the tractor and manure spreader in exchange for dressage time with some of the smarter, competitive horses. While Eileen thus spent some Saturday mornings, Eleanor hung out with her grandmother and grandfather on Bill's side, both of them physicians as well. Thaddeus had never met Eileen Creighton, though he had heard the story of Bill's premature death. So, when he parked and walked in through the barn, he had no idea who was working Sister Andromeda in the dressage arena as he passed the door. Moreover, the woman, girl, was wearing the standard headgear, so he wouldn't have been able to make her out anyway. Thaddeus quickly passed by and stopped at stall 3, where his own quarter horse, Uncle Do-Gooder, was waiting for him. It was almost as if Uncle Do-Gooder knew it was Saturday and knew Thaddeus would turn up any minute, loaded down with carrots and apples for the mounts. He held out a carrot, and the roan horse nuzzled it from his hand. As the horse munched and blinked at a fly, Thaddeus looked back toward the dressage arena. The girl, woman, sat a horse very nicely, and she seemed to have a damn fine figure, too, he imagined, although he'd only had a glance at the pretty trim legs and the loose denim work shirt, which was amply filled out. He thought he would like to know her name. He wondered if she wrote stories. That was too much to ask for. Thaddeus found Quentin at the north end of the barn, cleaning hay clotted with horse manure out of stall 7.
"So who's the gal?"
he absently asked, just generally making conversation. Quentin, wearing Oshkosh overalls and Wellington boots, stopped and removed his Cardinals baseball cap. He wiped his forehead with the cap.
"That? Eileen Creighton, Bill's widow."
"Never met her."
"Well, you should. Very classy."
"I'm sure. If she's horsey, she's probably just your type."
"Yeah,"
Quentin laughed.
"Just don't tell Donna. I like having my genitals intact."
"Don't worry. I won't breathe a word." "Is she pretty?" Quentin ignored the question.
"She's just coming over now and then. Like to work Sister Andromeda and some of the others. Pure dressage. I never did get much into that stuff."
"Is she pretty?"
"She's very pretty."
"Maybe I should meet her. Showmanship, ringmanship, it's all good," Thaddeus said. He had done some reading at the AQHA website and others. Maybe at some point he would have horses too, like Quentin. They were a great way to spend the day, and maybe he would get a chance to say hello to this Eileen Creighton.
Oh, I'm dressed for anything. Where do you want me to start?
Quentin looked Thaddeus up and down. The rookie lawyer was wearing Red Wing boots, khakis, and a flannel shirt.
Next time, lose the slacks, Quentin said. This is horse crap we're forking around with here, Quentin laughed. Tell you what, you take over the pitchfork and I'll go fire up the Ford and back the manure spreader in. Then we can clean the stalls and load the spreader all in one.
Fine.
Quentin handed the pitchfork to Thaddeus, who bent at the waist and went right to work. He was glad to have purely physical labor to do for a while. The past week and the tension of the Victor Haro case, the news media seeking comments from him for 100 miles around, and the questions from everyone he came in contact with had worn him out mentally. It was good to clean stalls, good to be around Quentin. Who knew? Maybe they would even talk some law, though law was off limits in the barn. There might be time for that later, when they adjourned to the Red Bird Inn for lunch, like they did most Saturdays when stall cleaning was done. 2 days ago, Thaddeus had watched Sheriff Charlie Altman hold his news conference on the north steps of the courthouse. The news conference was held just across the street from Thaddeus's office, and Thaddeus had to admit he had cracked his window and listened in to some of what was said. Charlie had tapped the mic and said,
"Test, testing,"
before he launched into what he had to say.
"Can you hear me back there?"
"Do you have a statement from Victor Haro?" the NBC affiliate reporter out of Quincy piped up. Charlie had lifted a hand.
"Let me start with some opening comments. Maybe what I have to say will answer many of your questions. And first, in answer to that question from Marley Sonogy, no, we don't have Victor Harrow's statement. Victor Haro at this time is represented by Bill Johansson III out of Polk County. And Mr. Johansson has instructed Mr. Haro not to discuss the case with anyone, as you might expect. Now, here's what we do know."
Charlie launched into the narrative. Ermeline Ransom coming to him in tears at 7:30 that morning, how they had brought her some black coffee and helped her to settle down, the story of the previous night and meeting Victor at the bus, awakening from a drug sleep at 4:30 the next morning, disoriented and terrified, not knowing where Victor was, having absolutely no recall of the night before, or what she had had to drink. The serious nature of her injuries and the fact that it clearly was an aggravated assault, a Class 2 felony in Illinois, which could get the guilty party up to 20 years in prison, that pictures had been taken and that the district attorney had been consulted no less than 5 times now.
"I already know the answer, Sheriff," said Al Petty of the Hickman Press. "But I have to ask for my readers, will any of the photographs be made public to us?"
"You're absolutely right, Al. You already know the answer. Next."
Charlie looked out over the small crowd of TV and news reporters, town merchants, a couple of city council members, and those holding TV lights and ensuring battery power for the filming.
What exactly happened here, Sheriff?"
someone up front asked.
I'm getting to that.
Will the grand jury consider the evidence?"
Sorry, you'll have to ask the DA for that answer."
"What's your opinion? Should the DA seek an indictment against Victor Haro?"
"Yeah,"
someone else chimed in before Charlie could answer.
"Should Vic Haro be charged with a crime?" Again, that's not my call to make. You'll have to ask District Attorney Quentin Irwin Jr. that question."
"Sheriff Altman, can you describe the injuries?"
asked Marilee Sonogy.
"Letters carved in her breasts and then inked."
Great clamor. Many shouted questions. Then Sheriff Altman raised a hand and waited for quiet. Finally, he answered.
"What do the letters spell?" "They spell V-I-C-T-O-R. Victor. All right, I think that's all for now. Thanks for coming."
Irwin's Farm's horse barn had been built in 1985 without regard to cost. Patriarch Ed Irwin had wanted the best for his animals, and he paid for what he wanted. Outside, the barn was a long, vertically planked structure, whitewashed. The roof peaked to a flat plane, out of which arose a second peak, where rows of clear-story windows shed light on the stalls below. But the interior was magnificent. It was built of dark-stained redwood front to back, 8 stalls per side, with stall doors hung from rollers so the doors would roll to the side and allow the horses to come and go.
Overhead, there were 16 circular fans, one per stall, individually controlled. Same for lights, as each stall allowed bright incandescent and fluorescent light controlled from a panel embedded just outside. The center walkway of the barn was turquoise brick, laid in a herringbone pattern that allowed spray washing with sand underneath and gravel with drainage tile under that to allow runoff. The whole idea of the brick was to have a walking surface that would give beneath the inhabitants' shod feet. Better than cement, Irwin thought, though others would have said the expense of building such a floor was excessive. The barn gleamed inside, thanks to a full-time stable staff that did everything from bathe the horses every day to lunge them, to ride them, to test their speeds on the regulation-sized track at the rear of the farm, to groom and curry. A veterinarian visited regularly and kept the animals in perfect condition, including 90-day checkups and individualized diets. A farrier cared for the horses, hooves, trimming the giant nails, and creating fitted horseshoes. The idea of Thaddeus helping Quentin clean stalls was something they did for entertainment, to be outside, to perform physical labor, to be around the animals and the smell of the barn, the hay, the oats, the medications, and even, yes, the excrement, which was all a part of keeping living, breathing 1,500-pound horses. Thaddeus forked cake hay and imagined himself with just such a spread someday. There was nothing about it he didn't already like and enjoy. He was clearing out stall 11 when he heard a voice call to him.
"Hey in there, what's your name?"
Thaddeus looked up. She was tall, he guessed 5'9", slender, as if stepping off a Vogue page, black hair, black eyebrows, pale blue eyes, with a playful smile at the corners of her mouth.
"Oh, hey," he said. "I'm Thaddeus. Is that you, practicing the dressage?"
She laughed and tossed her head.
"Just working Sister Andromeda. She needs it. Otherwise, she gets lazy. I'm Eileen Creighton."
"So you're horsey?"
"Was. In a past life. Actually, my husband and I kept horses. Quarter horses."
Thaddeus knew the story of Dr. Creighton and his untimely death. He skipped over that, saying,
"That's a breed I'm getting familiar with. I have one boarded here. Uncle Do-Gooder."
He removed his baseball cap and wiped his forehead with his wrist.
"Hot work."
She smiled.
"But the pay's good, right?"
"Top dollar. He'll buy my lunch for my efforts, which means I'm making about 80 cents an hour."
"That'll take you far. Well, anyway, I'd best get this little lady groomed and put away. She's already moving toward her stall."
"She likes her room?"
She likes her oats, you mean."
"Got it.
Well, thanks for saying hello."
She started to move away, then stopped and looked back across the English saddle at him.
"Hey, we're having a little get-together Christmas Eve. You busy?"
Thaddeus's heart bumped in his chest.
"I am now, thanks." "You know where I live?"
"Who doesn't? What should I bring?"
"Just your own sweet self. And wine, if you have a preference. Otherwise, I'll have Coors and all the rest of what you cowboys drink."
Not much of a drinker, but I'll help tend bar. I bartended my first year in law school. I make a great white Russian."
"See you then. Bring an apron, barkeep."
"Will do."